I'm Pat Bailey. I'm the medical director for advocacy in the D.C. office. I'm joined here by my co-moderator, Dr. Frank Opelka, who's the medical director for quality and health policy from the D.C. office. And I'm pleased to co-moderate with him this year's 10 Hot Topics session. Our speakers today are going to be three chairs of committees of jurisdiction that our office in D.C. Serves as staff for. The first will be Dr. Jim Gigantelli. Next, we'll hear from Dr. Linda Barney. And lastly, we'll hear from Dr. Ross Goldberg. They are the chairs of the Legislative Committee, the General Surgery Coding and Reimbursement Committee, and the Health Policy Advisory Council, respectively. I'm going to introduce all three of them now, and then they will just come to the mic and speak to you, and we're going to leave plenty of time for questions at the end. So first up, as I said, will be Dr. Jim Gigantelli, who serves as the chair of the Legislative Committee. Dr. Gigantelli is professor and interim chair of ophthalmology at the University of Nebraska. Got his medical degree from Vanderbilt, completed his residency at Baylor, and specialty training at Duke. He's a fellow of the American Academy of Ophthalmology, the American Society of Ophthalmic and Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery, and the American College of Surgeons, where he currently serves as a regent and the Health Policy Advisory Group. As I said, he is the chair of the Legislative Committee. Next, we'll hear from Dr. Linda Barney, who currently serves as Division Chief of General Surgery and Associate Professor at Wright State. She has over a decade of experience in surgical coding and reimbursement activities through the on the AMA CPT code. She serves as the chair of the General Surgery Coding and Reimbursement Committee. And lastly, we'll hear from Dr. Ross Goldberg, who's vice chair of the Department of Surgery and Specialty Ambulatory Medical Director at Maricopa Integrated Health System in Phoenix, associate professor at Creighton and the University of Arizona. Ross has a long history of being engaged in advocacy and health policy issues and currently serves as the chair of the Health Policy Advisory Council. So without any further ado, we'll hear from Dr.
So I've got nothing to disclose. So as was mentioned, I'm the chair of the Legislative Committee for the we were initially upon introduction to the committee told that these might be some of the issues that we might be looking at during this particular calendar year, just a small list. And we were faced with a few challenges. As a committee, we had a new chair, that would be myself, as well as many new committee members. We actually only had four incumbents on the committee with eight new members. Obviously, the large portfolio of issues that you all saw on the preceding slide, and we also had a whole host of new tools that we were, so to speak, utilizing within the Washington office, in particularly a completely revitalized HPAC team, who I think Dr. Goldberg's going to be talking about later in this morning's presentation. We had planned some in-person conferences throughout the year. We've actually only had the need to have two such conferences. We were also planning on having a fairly regular set of conference calls, but as it turned out, we were so effective with our email group need for these conference calls. And in fact, the other aspect of it is we found that our relationship with HPAC really became a very strong part of our functions and ultimately our success this particular year. We were kind of lock in step with the Washington office, which began a program or an initiative that many of you are actually already probably familiar with, the Stop Overregulating My OR Activities. Some people have actually kind of transfixed that to being these kind of the, how does it stop overregulating? It's the, nah, but not stop overregulating, the other kind of stay out of my operating room. I've heard a number of surgeons using as it, but the official term is stop overregulating my OR. And basically, the college was basically using this initiative to basically work with folks within the Beltway and on the Hill and also with our regulators on things such as the E&M guidelines, prior authorization, eliminating duplicative and redundant work that we all do in our offices, as well as addressing basically meaningful measures of looking at quality in the care of surgical patients. So what have we done through this calendar year? Well, the team, the committee, has basically looked at 12 different legislative bills, 10 of which were federal. Additionally, we had two state bills, one from Massachusetts and one from New York. And in each one, we basically went through a legislative summary. And then as a committee, like I said, mostly through kind of electronic communications, we had discussions and then basically opined back to the Washington office about these particular bills, either the nature of the bill itself or particular, so to speak, positions that we would have on issues that were contained within the bill. And this tended to result in basically action by the staff in Washington. And the one thing that's true is that what you'll mostly see is that action by the Washington staff tends to parallel the actual legislative movement. In other words, there's not a whole lot of work by the Washington office on things that really don't have much of an opportunity to really engender activity within the legislative offices on the Hill. If Congress isn't really open or the regulatory boards aren't really interested in moving forward with the activities, there's not a real effort behind the Washington office to actually engage in them, because it's not going to go anywhere. So here are the actual 10 bills that we reviewed, and as you can see, they cover a whole host of different things, from prior authorization to what used to be called meaningful use. It's now advancing clinical information. That's the term that's used. A whole host of things that were basically in the realm of either trauma, violence, and also a few bills on maternal mortality and a few others, as you can see. The ones that are actually in a different font are ones that we actually deferred action on or didn't fully support in some way, shape, or form. So what's the result of all of this activity? It's one of those things that I would actually say is kind of the, if you're old enough to remember, a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. In other words, we looked at independent bills, pieces of legislation, and the issue that occurs is what happens to these as they move forward on the Hill, because they don't always end up as individual bills or items that are passed by Congress. So what happened in the past year? Well, on February 9th, Congress actually passed the Bipartisan Budget Act, or the BBA. And what you'll see is how a number of these issues that we really addressed ultimately, in a sense, became law. Well, the first is in the area of meaningful use. Basically, we supported the original piece of legislation, which was H.R. 3120, and basically, this helped to reduce some of the requirements of meaningful use standards, as it was in the original, so to speak, legislation. They were supposed to become more stringent over time, and this basically became more relaxed, if you will. There was the repeal of the IPAB. So if you notice, that wasn't even on the 10 items that were listed that the Legislative Committee went through this year. The repeal of the IPAB is a recurring entity that's probably been in force ever since it was placed into its proposal many years ago. We've been fighting for the repeal for many years, and this was actually included in the BBA. There was the elimination of the dangerous the misvalue codes provision, which we again had been working to reduce for a number of congressional sessions. There were technical corrections in MIPS, and we have a couple of folks up here. Predominantly, this addressed the area of including an extension for the period of flexibility on the cost component, as well as flexibility in setting the performance thresholds. And we've got Dr. Opalka and Dr. Bailey up here who can talk a little bit more about, in depth, about what that basically entailed at some other point. We had a further extension of CHIP funding to where this now has funding for essentially the next decade. As well, there were areas that basically addressed opioid abuse, as well as increased fundings for the NIH. All of this were included. All of these issues were included in the Budget Act. A month later was the Consolidated Appropriations Act. Again, There was increase in cancer funding, in particular about $6 billion to the National Cancer Institute, as well as another $300 million. That included $300 million that was dedicated toward the Biden Moonshot Initiative. Again, some opioid funding, dollars that were basically for law enforcement, prevention, and treatment, as well as things to help at-risk communities. And there were a number of different trauma prevention provisions put into this particular Appropriations Act. Again, more on trauma research. And this was also the beginning of some things that basically would touch upon pediatric care. Within the Appropriations Act, there was dollars that, there was a call for HRSA to provide updates on the development of a pediatric trauma center and the areas that would have geographic shortfalls or pitfalls in terms of its systematic availability. And then what I'll kind of call the summer, for emergency medical services for pediatric patients. As I was going to say, I was going to call this the summer of kind of pediatric legislation or childhood legislation. In June, we actually had the STAR Act, which basically was advancing pediatric research and child-focused cancer treatments. In September, there was the Children's Hospital Graduate Medical Education Reauthorization, where Children's Hospital's GME was reauthorized with $325 million over 5 years. And then in late September, September 28th, there was an appropriations report that basically came out that, again, in a sense, this is something that that the Washington office and the college had been asking about for a number of congressional sessions. Those of you who basically had been showing up at the leadership and advocacy conference for a couple of years, you know, we were going to the Hill and we were asking for Congress to urge HRSA to basically enact a study to look at underserved populations for general surgeons as for general surgery, as they had actually done many, many years ago for primary care. And this is, again, is trying to ensure access to general surgery for our patients. And this was signed into law in late September. Also in late September, H.R. 6 was passed by both chambers of Congress, but was not signed into law until yesterday. And this was basically the Support Patients and Communities Act, which again was a bill, now a law that basically worked with regard to a whole host of different entities relative to the opioid crisis. But one of the things that it did not include, which was something that was, so to speak, an important part of this legislation pushed by the Washington office, is it doesn't contain any imposed federal mandates on physicians with regards to prescribing limits or with regards to CME. Those things we really pushed out of that legislation. There was a lot of work done by the Washington office and our fellows to basically keep these provisions out of that particular piece of legislation. Another part of that legislation, however, goes back again to those earlier, bills that were reviewed by the legislative committee that included the standardized electronic prior authorization for safe prescribing. And this basically helps to allow electronic prior authorization for parts of Medicare Part D. So that pretty much brings you all up to date on what, so to speak, we encountered as part of the legislative committee and what we see as the results of much of the activity that we were engaged within. What else is possibly going to happen before the end of this calendar year? Well, who knows necessarily. One particular area that we have a fair amount of interest in is basically the what we often call the PAPA, the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act. And it's a piece of legislation that has been, when was the original Papa passed? 20 years ago, maybe?
No, I think the first one was, I want to say 2006.
2006? It's been reauthorized once. This was the second reauthorization, and funding for it expired at the end of September, at the end of the fiscal year. It actually is still being funded with a continuing resolution at the current time, and we're anticipating that Congress will actually reauthorize it formally before the end of the calendar year. And we have tremendous interest in this. It has gone out of the House. It has gone out of the Senate. They're separate bills, however, and they have to be reconciled. But they both houses have basically contained a fair amount of information relative to the Mission Zero Act and a national trauma system that we think has tremendous interest to surgeons. So we're going to be focused on that, but again, this is something that Congress still has to pick up before the end of their session. I guess the issue of what will happen following the upcoming election, what can we anticipate for the future? Hard to say, depending upon what happens to each chamber of commerce. But as far as the college is concerned, it may include new business, but it will contain the same priorities that we always have had. Thank you very much.